Good evening, everybody. This is On the Line. Welcome. I am your host, Alex Sears. Tonight we got a very special episode, special guests here for you. Joining us for the first time tonight is Anne Lee Evan.
Thanks for having me.
All right. I really hope that I pronounced your name right, because I definitely didn't ask you how to say it.
We'll just roll with it. It's fine.
Also joining us, as always, is Rob Sasso.
Hey, Alec. Great to be back.
And I'm Alex Sears. We've got a great show for you tonight. We're going to jump straight into it. This week, a lot of hubbub around this gentleman who was fired from Google. Really just kind of a sad story where a guy writes a memo that sends it to the whole company and winds up without a job a few days later. So there's a whole lot around this. I know the guy's been kind of doing like the whole media tour. He was on Devin Molyneux's web show, guy with the hardest name to pronounce ever. So this is just kind of a general free speech issue for everybody. Rob, why don't you start us off? Give us some of your thoughts on the Google memo.
Well, first off, we have to recognize that Google, as a private corporation, does have the right to do whatever they want to do with him, and they fired him for writing this memo, which sadly, I have to say, they have every right to do. But going forward, I think, look, as conservatives, anything you say really has to be taken very seriously, because even if this guy wasn't saying that all affirmative action type stuff is bad, he was basically making the argument that, hey, the program we have right now for having women get integrated into our company is not that good. We're using X. Why don't we use Y? And even doing that, he was vilified for. And I think it's very dangerous, because as someone who just wants to say something the way James Damore said, where he basically was like, hey, we can help out women, we just have to do this, and he got accused of doing something else, it's really scary, because maybe he might not even be a conservative. Maybe he might just be, oh, maybe he's a progressive who's trying to help women even more, and he just had this program that he wanted to implement. It's very sad to see that he was removed for that. Maybe it shouldn't have been leaked, but going forward, I think it's very annoying to see that every time something comes out, like something silly like this, like it was nothing that he was saying was crazy. It was all stuff you could back up with science, but he was removed from his job. It's very sad, and I would like to see that more conservatives would fight back, and I think they are, because I know there's a lawsuit coming out, which I'm very happy to see go forward.
The guy whose name is James Damore, by the way, from what I watched during his interview with Stephen, he was took a very centrist kind of stance. He didn't try to lean himself conservative or liberal. He was very, very middle ground. He said he could see certain things from both sides they didn't like, certain things from both sides that he might like. So I think the guy might actually be, you know, one of those true centrists that are out there. But a very logical guy, of course. When you work in computer science, everything is logical. And that's where this guy is kind of coming from, with this whole backing up the science, with charts and logic and graphs, and how it's scientifically and biologically provable that women are different than men and have different goals in life, and their brains are wired differently. It's just a real shame that a guy with a biology degree who's using biological facts is being removed from his job from Google for just saying the wrong thing.
Exactly. And it's not even that. He made a suggestion to the company based off of facts and statistics, and for this he was fired. And the thing about it is that it's another subversive tactic that I cannot stand, when people, instead of addressing claims and using their own logic and evidence to debate other people's logic and evidence, they did a subversive method of leaking the memo out to the press, who then made a huge deal about it and basically strawmanned him and said that, oh, he just hates women, oh, he hates diverse or racial diversity. And it was just, this tactic happens a lot. So every time I hear about it, I just get so upset, because it just proves that we don't really value actual debate to the extent that we really should. And nowadays it's just okay to get people fired because they say something that you may not agree with. And the easy thing to do about this could have been, oh, I disagree with some of his points, here's why. Instead, he was fired from his job.
definitely something I like to bring up would be, what is the actual argument? Because we're really just talking about should he have been fired or what whole ethical situation, but what is he actually saying? When you look at Google and all the Silicon Valley companies, they're very male-oriented, mainly because they're not trying to be a boys' club or a country club. It's basically because the hours are very weird and erratic. You could get called out from California to New York in a moment's notice. The deadlines are very strong and they're very, very erratic as well. You could be working at any time of the day. And I don't think women like that is a general rule. I think men like that more because they're not afraid to make a high-risk, high-reward job. That's why you see women being teachers more, because it's low-risk, low reward, but they know that they're getting their job there. They get tenure. They can work for 30 years. But I'm just saying this as a general rule. What James was trying to bring up was maybe we work a way to have women get into the company where maybe they have more structured jobs. They have better hours. They have more flexible time where they can do family leave. They have maternity leave. And what James is saying as a general rule is actually correct, that women need more structure in their jobs than men do. And I think that he's not being wrong or unfair to women when he's saying this. He's actually trying to help them. And I think when you look at Anne, if Anne wants to do a show her whole life and not have a family, that's her prerogative. And if she wants to stop having work, be a housewife, and she wants to do that, that's also her prerogative. And I think that what James is saying is that women should have the choice. And I think instead of what he's saying was basically changing the way people are let into the company, but not changing how it's run, was hurting women. And what he was saying is we can make it even playing field where everyone gets in, but we offer women a different package than we offer men. And I think that he was very fair in doing so, and I think that he was very incorrectly pilloried for doing what he did.
There's even, just kind of jump off of you, in parts of the memo, he was talking about the tactics that Google uses to try and recruit women, especially in the computer science field, where women are underrepresented in the workplace and even in the classroom. And underrepresented being a loose term, basically because women are just choosing to not have computer science degrees. It's not that they're being bullied out of the program. It's just a fact of life that less women want to pursue a job where they're going to be typing code behind a computer all day. I think the percentage is 18% of computer science majors are women. And as someone who's in the computer science field, I am a computer science student right now. You walk into any classroom and there's like, it's almost like, you know, seeing a ghost if you see a girl in there. It's crazy. Like, the first class I walked into my freshman year, there were three girls in that, and I almost fell on the floor just because I was being, you know, like, you kind of have this mental preparation going into being a freshman in college, walking into a computer science class, like, I'm just never going to meet girls. Like, that's just kind of what it is, you know? So it's really what boils down to is this guy was coming up. He was like, oh, we should have different strategies for getting women to get interested in coding. We should have different strategies for bringing more women into Google to code. And he was really helping Google do their job and helping them boost their diversity populations when it comes to women and men and computer science jobs. And Google fired him for it again, as we keep saying, this poor guy.
Yeah. And like the thing about this, Mr. Damore came at this from a very, a more gentle approach than I probably would have taken to it, is that whenever I hear about like, oh, there aren't women in this field, I'm like, well, okay, women aren't interested in it, rather than taking the approach he did, which was, okay, how do we make this appeal more to women? Because women are more language-based on as a general rule, and men are more statistics-based, I think is how it was phrased. But I probably would just say, oh, if you don't want to do this job, you don't want to do this job. But he came up with suggestions to try to get women in the field that weren't inherently discriminatory to either men or white people also in some case. I disagree with him in the fact that I don't think diversity of gender and race is inherently good or bad. I just think it's a factor. So I would disagree with him that the system needs to be changed in order to account for this. But I do think that what he was trying to do is get more women interested in things. And on the point of his political beliefs, I think in the memo he says that he is a classical liberal, which is a wide range of things, so I don't actually know what he is, but he definitely came at this from a very helpful perspective, so I don't know where the outrage was. It's ridiculous.
I think where the outrage was is just the left-wing virtue signaling, because I think, I forgot the Chiron that CNN ran, because I don't watch CNN, but what they did, what they basically said was that this guy was basically saying women weren't biologically equipped to hold jobs That's basically what they said he was saying, and that's not what he said at all. And basically this whole thing was that, oh, a man said that women aren't able to do the same jobs as men do. That's what they read it as. And then we have to shut this guy down. We have to get him fired. We have to put his name out there. We have to make sure that his life's a living hell. And I think that's really unfair. But I'm really happy about, I mentioned earlier, the lawsuit. I really like to see what comes of it, because he said that they were actually being very discriminatory in their hiring practices when it came to hiring people. They were basically using the determining factor of race and gender as whether they're coming in or not. And I think in California that would violate law. So I think it would be very interesting to see what precedent is set from this court case if he does choose to go for it, because there needs to be some change. Because if companies can just oust people because they don't like their views, that's not very ethical at all. And I think moving forward, you can't really have companies that are skirting the law, even though it's perfectly legal, but removing people they disagree with, because who cares? I mean, if he has conservative beliefs, if he's a good engineer, why not have him? I mean, you're really just hurting your own company when you're doing that. And I think it's showing how the left is just abusing the free market any way they can, whether it just be with laws or just by these in-company rulings.
You mentioned this lawsuit, and it is interesting that Google is actually under investigation for violating the Equal Pay Act for paying women less than they pay men. So their virtue signaling might not be going as far as to paying women the full dollar that they are deserving. So,
oh my goodness.
Yeah, Google really just kind of violating their own standards right there. And James is right, James Damore, when he says that, you know, Google and Silicon Valley as a whole is an echo chamber for just liberal ideas. And then Google getting a, not even really a conservative idea, but just like an idea that, oh, hey, maybe we should do different things to get women hired here. And he was fired for it. How living up to the stereotype is that? I just think that's kind of funny.
The funny thing about this is I've heard this memo compared to the 95 Theses. So I would be interested in seeing if this sparks like the 21st century version of the 16th century Protestant Reformation, but instead it opens up the ideological door so people stop treating people's ideological positions as the entirety of what that human being is.
It'd be real interesting if we saw Silicon Valley suddenly like erupt in conservatism. maybe even Mark Zuckerberg, who is probably planning a presidential run in 2020. Maybe he might swing to the right a little bit.
Oh, yeah, never we know. Don't need him running.
Rob likes politicians to stay politicians and his businessmen to stay businessmen.
Exactly.
All right. So let's go ahead and move on. Let's get out of the Google arena, and let's get into North Korea. Kind of the whole situation escalating. We talked a little bit about North Korea last week. We're still talking about it this week, which means that there's still issues. So Trump recently saying fire and fury going to rain down upon North Korea or something along those lines. And how do you feel about these complicated military things going on, I guess?
Well, for one, I think that Kim Jong-un, I'm going to be a little bit harsh with this, but honestly, I think that he is a petulant child who's and the shoes that he got down from his daddy are too big for him, so he's trying to show off. I know that North Korea has had problems upholding sanctions since 85 or since before that. I definitely think that this fire fury remark, as much as I hate to compare Trump to Reagan, I definitely think that it reminds me of the National Association of Evangelicals in Orlando speech, or the Evil Empire speech, where Reagan actually stands up there, calls them the evil empire, the media freaks out, and meanwhile, we're still not 5 minutes away from nuclear devastation. And I think the fact that General Mattis backed him up and said, yes, if North Korea tries something, that will be the end of them, I think that definitely was a good thing. I think that sanctions are important, but I think you definitely have to come at them from a position of strength if you're dealing with somebody like Kim Jong-un. And, you know, commies are afraid to die, so I don't think that they're actually going to try something if they know that the U.S. can retaliate, but those are my overall views on that.
Well, I think there's two major things at play here. One is the fact that if you look about a nuclear firefight, it's something that the U.S. obviously wins, because Right now, they're talking about hitting Guam. They're seriously considering hitting Guam. Who knows what Kim's thinking about, but if he does aim a missile at Guam, obviously what's going to happen is U.S. is going to be able to counter-strike it, and we could just nuke North Korea to smithereens, because I don't think anyone's going to have a problem with that once they try and attack the United States. So they know that if anything's going to come of it, it's going to be mutually assured destruction. And that leads me to my second point, which is Kim Jong-un knows how to play with Trump, because he knows Trump's very big egotist, and he knows if he just calls him a buffoon or he insults the United States, he knows he can get a response out of him. And I think the problem with that is, well, we know North Korea is most likely not going to attack us because they know the result of that. But he knows if he can get in Trump's head and get Trump to say something stupid or get Trump to make a commitment he doesn't want to make, he knows he could put him in a really bad spot. And I think this has all been boiling up since the 90s when Bill Clinton signed in to a treaty with North Korea where they would give him aid in return for them shutting down, I think it was 2 nuclear reactors, but then they would get to build 2 more. And I think this is all leading up from bad policy in the 90s, and it's kind of an exploding on the scene for Trump, who, in fact, in 1999, talked about how he wanted to, if he were to run for president for the 2000 election, he wanted to negotiate heavily with North Korea until the last possible second, where he would then end up having to fire missiles at him. And I think it was a very good point by him then, and I think now it also rings strong that we have to be strong with North Korea, and I think that a strong Republican policy coming out for foreign policy where we're discussing how we're going to make North Korea kind of suffer with sanctions and also with strong talk. I think Trump's doing a really good job here, and I think this is one of his strong suits going after the foreign policy wins.
I don't think sanctions is going to be enough here. I'm pretty sure North Korea is hurting already when it comes to feeding its people. Just kind of in general, the poor North Korean populace who haven't been conscripted into the army is probably not doing too great. And also, honestly, the fire and fury warning, I don't think that's for Kim Jong-un's benefit. I think that whole comment, all of this stuff that Trump and Mattis are going out and saying, I think that's more for China. I think that this is, if anything does happen, this is going to be kind of a proxy war like the original Korean Wars, where it was us versus Russia and China, basically. And I think that's what this is going to boil down to again, is it's going to be another proxy war between us and North Korea, but really it's us versus China and maybe Russia. It really just kind of depends on what it comes down to. Now, it does raise some concern that North Korea is kind of in a position right now where they have the capability to hit land owned by the United States. They are within range of Guam. It's 2,100 miles. Looking at the map, they actually have to fly over Japan in order to fly their missiles over Japan in order to hit Guam. But it is possible. And there are missile defense systems being set up in Guam. And I don't think that if North Korea, or I do think that if North Korea happens to fire a missile at Guam, they will no longer exist. And then there will be repercussions from China or Russia or whoever else wants to step in and say, ooh, Trump, you went too far there. But I do think that that is probably what's going to happen. And one way or another, North Korea and its poor, you know, few million citizens that probably don't want to be there anyway aren't going to be there anymore either.
Yeah, I've heard two approaches to this. I've heard a diplomatic approach to this, and I've heard the military approach to this. The diplomatic approach was to persuade China to convince North Korea it would be in their best interest to be absorbed by South Korea to form one Korean Republic of some kind, since North Korea is a failing state. It's one of the poorest nations out there. And the military approach, I've heard a lot of negatives to that. Unfortunately, if there was a military approach, a lot of U.S. forces in South Korea and Japan are definitely vulnerable to attack, as well as the massive refugee crisis from North Korea to China, or to Beijing specifically, likely. But so if it did come down to war of some kind, then there'd be a lot of repercussions to that rather than just, oh, North Korea is going to be gone.
Well, I think Trump's in case for a real win-win here when we're talking about strategy, because one thing that really helped Reagan was his Star Wars program and also his huge buildup of the military, because what it did was it made the USSR feel that they needed to do that as well. And what it ended up leading to is the demise, because their budget basically ran out and the country went insolvent. So I think Trump's in a win-win because not only was the military budget left small after 8 years of Obama, he could build that up because he has to already, but if he just keeps acting like he's going to build it up and build it up, he could scare the Kim regime into doing something stupid because he says, oh, he thinks, oh, America, they're ramping up their military budget. Something must be going on when Trump's really just building it back up to the normal strength we should have had it at. And then Kim might do something stupid where he either acts aggressively towards South Korea or he attacks another ship like he did a couple of years ago and do something where the U.S. can get into a real strong position where they can either tell China to cut off their support or get North Korea to finally back down nuclear-wise. There's a lot that could happen over the next couple of years, but I think Trump is in a real win-win if he plays this right because he can win at home and he can win for the whole entire world by making sure North Korea is no longer a threat. But going to Ann's point, I think it's really cool to see that maybe unified Korea would happen because I think that would remove a lot of tension in the world. But I think, sadly, it'd be a pipe dream, but I think it'd be a really cool option where the Koreans can unite again and the people in North Korea can leave the slave camp that is their country.
Yeah, I think that's a unified Korea is probably a little bit far-fetched, but that's best case scenario. And I do agree with you on that point of building up the military, Rob, but I'm not sure that Kim Jong-un, like Ann said, he's a big baby. I don't think he's very smart. And because he just seems to kill anybody that disagrees with him. So if he's got a military commander with him who's like, oh, Trump is doing blah, 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 or whatever else, or building up their military budget, we should be more careful. And or he even says we should attack. I really just think Kim Jong-un is going to do whatever he wants to. It doesn't matter what we do, what anybody else does. It might not even matter what China tells him. He's just going to do what he wants because he thinks that he's, you know, God incarnate, probably. Nobody's really been able to psyche-val Kim Jong-un. I'm sure that'd be an interesting conversation. If you want something like that, you can go watch The Interview. Great movie. All right, so I think we're going to move on to our last topic for tonight. I'm going to talk a little bit of immigration, specifically the RAISE Act. Which was the new act that came out, cutting immigration, basically doing kind of a large reform of immigration, making the immigration system a meritocracy, giving, you know, kind of points to people. So immigrants will be coming into the U.S. On a point-based system. Really kind of different ideas for what we should do immigration-wise, but at least something is being talked about. Maybe not this act specifically becomes law, but at least it puts the discussion out there. So kind of general thoughts, how are we thinking about the future of immigration in America?
Well, this is what Trump ran on. We all knew from his first speech he wanted tough immigration, whether it be the wall or even at some point he pointed to a Muslim ban, which never came into fruition, luckily. But other than that, we were going to get strong immigration reform. And I don't have the numbers on me, but I know that illegal border crossings have gone down dramatically and that all forms of illegal immigration look like they've been really slowing down, even just from his talk out of Mexico, which is really good for our southern border states. And the RAISE Act, creating meritocracy, I think it's very good because the analogy I like to use for immigration is that America is basically a house, and Trump being the man of the house, he gets to choose who comes in, who comes out, and he really doesn't need a good reason why. But he is giving a good reason why here. Basically, what he's doing is he's allowing that people who already speak English, people who are coming here with marketable skills, can get into the country because there's people all over the world who speak English, whether it be in Asia, whether it be in Australia, or whether it be in England, that can really help the United States be a net benefit, come over here, get a job, work, and help the economy. What the left tries to think is that this is a racist program where only white immigrants would come over, which it isn't, because there are millions of Asians who can speak English perfectly fine, and they can come over and help. And what the left is trying to aim at is basically keeping all people who come over here, and maybe they want the welfare state to help them out. We're not going to accuse every immigrant of having negative motives, but obviously when someone comes over here with no skills and no ability to speak the major language of the country, they're obviously not going to be a benefit for a while. So going forward, not as a big Trump fan, I think it's going to be a huge win. I think he can really muscle the Republican Party to get all 52 votes for this. And I think that if he's going to get a win this year, the RAISE Act is going to be it, because I think everyone in the Republican Party can rally around this.
I do agree with the meritocracy program. I think that's definitely a positive thing. However, I disagree with him lowering the rate of immigrants that we take in, because I think that immigration is actually can be a positive thing as long as it's a meritocracy-based program and you're not importing like low-skilled workers or people who are just taking up most of the agricultural service industry tiers. I think that immigrants who share cultural values with Americans, like hard work, personal responsibility, egalitarianism, are great for innovation, which is therefore great for the economy. There was this one report called Patent Pending, How Immigrants Are Reinvigorating the American Economy. And it talked about how 3/4 of the top 10 patent-producing universities had at least one foreign-born inventor in the group. And another thing is that a third of U.S. innovators are actually immigrants. So I think that a meritocracy-based program will definitely go back to the innovation, which is good for the U.S. economy.
Right. It goes back to the idea that lots of people have lots of really good ideas and lots of people are really smart. And it is the most beneficial for the United States to have those people in the United States, whether or not they were born here or not. One thing that kind of like makes me think of the RAISE Act, it makes me think of the original days of the like kind of golden age of immigration, you know, Ellis Island and all the immigrants going through there or coming over from Europe and whatnot, where they're passing through, you know, 18,000 people a day into the country. Everything there was kind of based on like it was either merit or whether or not you had marketable skills and everything else. So, I think that's kind of what Trump is trying to get back to, because if you couldn't speak the language, were sick, had any kind of criminal record, you got stuck back on the boat and shipped back to wherever you came from. And that's a pretty good policy, you know, especially back then they didn't want, you know, random diseases to come into the country. They wanted people to increase the economy, and they wanted people to be able to, you know, survive here. They didn't have really welfare programs set up back then that would work for them. So the last thing I wanted were homeless people on the street. So I do like most of the things that is coming out of this RAISE Act. I agree with you, Anne. I'm not all for this kind of lower rate of immigration. I'm all for, you know, however many immigrants I want to get in here legally that have marketable skills to come here. I want, you know, lots of Asian people to come here that have great skills in every single industry pretty much there is. I want lots of Indian people to come here that have phenomenal skills, especially in the computer science realm. Like we were just talking about Google, I, you know, have plenty of Indian classmates at my school, and just absolutely anyone else who can come in. I think that's a really great thing.
And you were mentioning how back in the heyday, like you said, with Ellis Island, people were coming through and they were sick, maybe send them back. Well, that's not what we're worried about now. What we're worried about now is terrorists coming through from the Middle East. Not all Muslims, but people who are willingly saying death to America is the only sentence they know in English, and we're coming here to destroy the country we love. And I think that if that's going to be the major focus, if that's what this does, this will force a lot of people out, because you could tell when there's people coming from the Middle East who don't have any of these marketable skills, have these shaky ties, and they have a bunch of past discrepancies that you really don't want them coming into the country. Now we have a good and correct reason to not let them in. And I think that it creates a fair market for anyone from the Middle East who actually wants to come in and who has those marketable skills. And this, what the left wants to make you think is that this hurts immigrants, but this actually helps the useful immigrants that can come over here and help America. And I think that as a country that embraces immigration and whose majority of people are coming from immigrants, whether it be on the Mayflower or they came over through the Mexican border, they came over on a plane 10 years ago, it's going to have to help everyone who wants to come here and make this country a better place, because it's tough with terrorism, it's tough with a welfare state to find the people who are going to come here and actually embrace the ideals that this country upholds. But at the end of the day, Trump actually laid out a good policy. While it might not be the final product, this has the makings of a very good piece of legislation that can really boost his presidency.
Yeah, I definitely agree with the point of they have to share cultural values, and it shows that there's more to the side of immigration rather than just closed borders, open borders, it's definitely a little bit more complicated than that. And the fact that one, I think it was a senator, Johnny Isaacson, he said that, oh, we've got the healthcare plan, we've got the tax plan, that's all we need, we're good to go. I definitely disagree with that. I think immigration can either cost or save taxpayers a lot of money. So it is very important up there with tax reform. And this is one thing where I definitely disagree with the left here, and I definitely disagree with who shall not be named the alt-right. You know, the left is saying, oh, we need to import cheap labor, and then they complain about low wages, and then the alt-right says closed border, and they reduce innovation, and then they complain about stagnation. So it's multifaceted, and there's more to it than open or closed, and so I disagree with cutting it by half, but I agree with the meritocracy part of the plan.
And definitely we could benefit from this politically as the right, because Guy Benson, he tweeted out a poll basically for the five or six different points of this bill. A majority of people support a point system, 3 and 5 people support that. 3 and 5 people support a limited number of refugees, and about 3 and 5 people support an emphasis on skills. And when you're looking at 3 and 5 as a whole entire voter base, that's a lot of Republicans and even a majority of independents and Democrats. So if Trump wants to get bipartisan here, or Trump wants to make sure that Democrats are in a position where they can't, where they're going to look foolish if they all vote no, this is the bill to do it, because healthcare is very divisive, obviously. Taxes can't really happen until healthcare happens, so that's out of the question. But when you talk about immigration, you can get people from the other side of the aisle to come over and say, hey, we need help, because especially a lot of Democrats along the border, they know that the Hispanics that come over, they get hurt by this illegal immigration and this lack of skills coming over the border. So definitely Trump can get a bipartisan win. And I think that the GOP would benefit this as a whole, because right now they look like they're kind of confused. But if they can force the Democrats to come over and vote for their bill, that'd be a real huge victory for 2017.
I think you're right there, Rob. And I think that's also going to be it for us tonight. I'd like to thank Anne for joining us. And where can we find you online?
My Twitter is @cynicalanne, and from there you can find my YouTube channel and everything else. So I'm gonna get my Twitter there, and that will call that good.
All right, Rob, where can we find you at?
Obviously, I'm a contributor. You'll find my articles at Lone Conservative. I'm here. My Twitter is @RealRobertSasso, and I'd like to thank Ant for coming on. It was a great conversation.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
All right. Thank you again for coming on, Ann. I'm Alex Sears. You can find me at SearsAL on Twitter, and as always, on loanconservative.com. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next week.